Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, thank you for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris, and today our special guests are Matt McFarland and Amanda Hahn. They're the owners of Keystone CPA. Matt has over 20 years of experience in public accounting as a CPA and tax strategist. He has worked for both the Big Four and regional CPA firms. Matt served as a tax manager in their private client advisor group, where he focused his expertise in tax planning and compliance for high net worth individuals, business owners, commercial real estate investors, and professional athletes. Amanda has over 18 years of experience as a CPA with special emphasis in real estate, self-directed investing, individual tax planning. Amanda has extensive Big Four public accounting experience in the lead tax group serving clients in real estate industry. Welcome both of you to our radio show.
Thanks for having us.
Appreciate it, Bruce.
You guys have been in this thing almost 2 decades. That just doesn't seem possible.
We'll pretend that's not the case. How's that sound?
being serious, because since I did this kind of at an early age too, where I was speaking in front of an audience, you know, in my early 30s, every once in a while, do people sit across from you and go, you look too young to be able to know all this stuff?
People generally say that to me, but not to Matt, because of my hair.
that's great.
Yeah, no, I'm the guy who looks like he's 70, so it's fine.
Well, it's probably true during about mid-tax season. You guys, is your business more structured to where your type of client needs you all year, and then naturally there's a rush during tax season, but is that more your clientele that you really are in the strategic planning a lot during the year for a client?
Yeah, I think it's interesting in that, yes, we meet with clients pretty much throughout the year, and so you know, there's good and bad. I think a lot of CPAs typically, you know, work very, very, very busy January through April, and then they kind of close up, go on vacation for a few months, and then, you know, come back again for you know, the second tax time. So for us, I mean, we're pretty, our busy time is pretty consistent all year round. But the good thing about that, though, is in busy season when we're doing tax returns, there's not a lot of surprises. Because we've already been talking to clients throughout the year, we would already be aware of what's going on. So there's not a lot of the last minute scrambling, which is a good thing.
You know, there's something interesting that happens when people do their taxes. Sometimes they almost act like you're their counselor. Because if they have had, let's say, I can imagine when you were sitting across from people in 2008 and 9 and they were involved in real estate, or way back in, say, 2002 or 3 for the stock crash, you actually deal with some people that are pretty sad.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's in our business, and like a lot of other ones, you know, you see real life. So it's, you know, a lot of times it's numbers on paper, but a lot of times it's real true stuff where, you know, someone lost 50 grand, 100 grand or more than that, or, you know, but also obviously we get to see the upside.
That's
too,
right. So it's been happier. It's been happier more recently. That's a good thing.
Yeah. And sometimes, like you said, we do take on the role of a counselor in an unexpected way. A lot of times, because we work heavily with real estate investors, we do find there are times when we'll meet with the husband and wife, and maybe one of them is really gung-ho about real estate and wants to put all their money in real estate, and then you have the other spouse who's, you know, just not quite sure. So sometimes we're kind of come in as the intermediary to try to, you know, get them to an agreement. So that's interesting as well.
Do you think that the majority of your clients really are very diversified, or are they more inclined to be just in the pile of investments where they have expertise?
Well, I mean, I think for us, you know, we're probably not representative of most CPAs, but for us, because we have chosen for our firm to specialize in the real estate industry, I would say the vast majority of our clients have a significant amount of their wealth in real estate. And, you know, I know that there's always a dispute about whether diversification is good or not, but for me personally, I come from the belief that if you personally have a special or unique insight into a particular industry or particular business, it makes sense to have more of your eggs in that basket than to really spread it out evenly over other investment classes maybe you don't know as much about.
Yeah, I definitely land in that category. And it's because I have dabbled in some of those other things and realized I don't have a clue what I'm doing. I really don't. So I would have to take a lot of time to become an expert in that, or I just sort of pass on the category. So I definitely think for me that was better. But I always hear that from some people that aren't in our world, you know, oh, it's really important to diversify. And usually they're diversifying in something they have no idea what they're doing. You know, it's like they have a part of their money in a hedge fund that's invested in, you know, Botswana, whatever. And you're going, really? Okay. I don't know about that. Okay. California's tax rate bothered me last year because we managed to reach the upper limits of what was possible. And I didn't like that. So let's talk about that first. What is the tax rate progression? And also, is it causing people to contemplate not being here?
Yeah, no, you bring up a great point. I mean, it is, California is obviously, for those people who may be listening outside of the state of California don't know this, it is, in our experience, one of the highest, if not the highest, one of the highest states tax rates. New York is pretty big. Illinois is big. Because it's there, you get to about 9-10% of a California rate if you're single when you're making $50,000 or if you are married making about $100,000. So, you know, and obviously in Southern California, California, that can come up pretty quickly if you have, you know, two people working W-2 jobs, you know. So we see it all the time. I mean, it's, you know, when you're talking to somebody about tax rates, I'm like, okay, we got to talk about federal. It's 25, 30, 35%. And you're like, oh, don't forget about the other, you know, almost automatically always add 10% for California just because most of our clients are in that range where they're making over $50,000 or $100,000, obviously. So it's a real, real life problem. And yeah, definitely, I think, you know, people are definitely moving out. I mean, we know people that have moved out of the state to relocate their business or just to kind of retire, you know, get out of California, so they're not looking at that 10, 12, 13% every year.
Well, now isn't there another tax rate too? How high do you get? Excuse me, how high can you get? Because it doesn't seem like that was the tax rate I ended up paying.
No, you can in the state of California, you can get up to 13.3%, and that would apply to anybody making over $1 million a year. So, that's interesting because, you know, you get to 100,000 as a married couple and it kicks in to 9%, but then, you know, then it, I guess, goes up slowly from there to 13.3%. But obviously, yeah, it's pretty huge when you think about that you're already paying anywhere from 25 to 40, 45% to the IRS, you know.
Well, let's talk about the federal rate, too, because there's some new additions to the tax. It wasn't like if we had this conversation in 2013, you could have told me a top tax rate and that was it. Mm-hmm. And now there's more pieces that can get added onto. So what are those new pieces and what are we added up to now?
That's a good question. So yeah, the federal rate, the highest now is 39.6%. So, you know, like Matt said, you add 39.6 to another 13% for California. Now we're, you know, more than half of your money is already going to various governmental agencies. Now, go ahead.
How do you reach the 39.6?
39.6 for married people is
it's 450.
Over 450.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. And go ahead. I mean, I cut you off and I didn't mean to. So there's other now taxes or unearned income.
Yes. And, you know, just going back a little bit, for a married couple, the 39.6% hits when your income is $450,000. For a single person, it's actually $400,000. So we can see there's a huge marriage penalty there because you would envision that, you know, single you make $400,000. Maybe for married, you can have up to $800,000 of income, but that's not the case. You only get $50,000 incremental income before you get to that top rate. But yes, what else is you know, somewhat new, it's been around for over a year now, is two brand new taxes. One is the unearned income Medicare contributions tax.
Mm-hmm.
That's a mouthful. Essentially, a lot of people call that Obamacare tax. And that's an additional 3.8% on top of federal and state income taxes, and that's assessed on investment income. And the part that, you know, impacts real estate investors the most probably is going to be with respect to net rental income or maybe capital gains if we're selling investment properties. And also, you know, for people maybe doing some more lending activities, interest income is also potentially subject to this 3.8% as well.
So it's if you're over what amount does that kick in, the 3.8?
3.8 kicks in at 200 for a single or 250 as a married couple of actually adjusted gross income. So
it sneaks in there before the 39.6 rate does.
Oh, yeah,
yep.
Yeah.
So
like Amanda said, there's a marriage penalty there, too, because you can see a single person kicks in at 200. You would think a married couple would kick in at 400, but oh, no.
Wow, okay. So after a certain amount of income, the federal rate is actually, what you said, 43 and change.
Yeah.
Wow. Well,
yeah.
I guess it's a good idea to avoid some of this stuff, then.
Yeah, what's interesting is, you know, we talk about, you know, you hear about the marriage penalty, but a lot of times people don't think about it. I was actually speaking with a client yesterday who's a very successful broker, real estate broker, and we were talking about a strategy. He's unmarried. He has a girlfriend. So one of my strategies was his girlfriend is helping him in the business. So I said, well, let's shift some income over to her because she's not currently making a lot of income. And then he tells me, well, you know, I might potentially propose real soon here. And so I told him, well, you know, that's probably bad for tax reasons.
That's going to cost you 15 grand a year, pal. Don't do it.
Yeah. So, you know, it's interesting how people, you know, generally don't really think about stuff like that. But when you look at the numbers and how the tax rates work, you can see a huge difference that you might suffer for someone who's, you know, potentially getting married in the near future.
Where does a Social Security tax cut off? At what dollar amount for?
I don't have the exact number in front of me, but it's about $117,000 in that range, I think, is the last number I saw for that.
And Medicare?
Medicare never cuts off, so as an employee, you're always paying the 1.45% on any earned income.
Right. It used to stop, but it doesn't anymore, right?
Yeah, that might be before my time. You know, I am old, but I've been doing this.
Well, I actually thought it was fairly recent.
The Social Security one, they keep ramping up that limit a little bit each year.
Mm-hmm.
Five, 6 years ago, I think it was around 100,000, to be honest with you. Now it's at 117, but and it might even be higher than that. That was the last number I had in my head. But, yeah, so it's, that's a bigger chunk of it, so at least I guess that stops at some point. But it still adds up to a big dollar that people get taken out of their paychecks.
Well, how do people protect against this? How can they make some choices to say, okay, I just don't want to get in that high of a tax bracket? I want to end up having the revenue, but I want to take it in such a way that it's not fully burdened. So what are some of the choices that your clients make to help this go down?
I think just, you know, one thing to keep in mind in terms of minimizing taxes in general is really to start with understanding what are tax deductible items, because I think that's the thing that really, from speaking with a lot of people, is the one thing that people are really confused about, you know, is really not understanding what can I deduct. So if they're spending money traveling, or if they went to a class, and so a lot of times it's just the fact that we don't know what are legitimate write-offs. I think, you know, understanding what are legitimate write-offs can really help to reduce taxes. And really the IRS is, you know, it's pretty clear about what is deductible and what's not deductible. And really they're looking at two key terms, which is ordinary and necessary. And so if you're incurring an expense, whether it's an expense for a laptop or a cell phone or marketing expenses. If you're a real estate investor, for example, would these expenses be ordinary and necessary in carrying on your business? And if the answer is yes, then generally that means it's tax deductible. I think there's a lot of myth or misinformation out there about the fact that, you know, you have to have an LLC or you have to have a corporation in order to save taxes and write off your expenses. And that's not 100% true. We do like legal entities because they help us to minimize taxes, and especially with respect to certain employment taxes, like what you were talking about, Bruce, on Medicare, payroll tax stuff. That's definitely helpful. But if we take a step back and just look at general expenses, what are some business expenses we can write off? Well, you can write off those expenses as long as they're ordinary and necessary in the course of your activities. You don't have to have an LLC. You don't have to have a corporation. Those are deductible regardless.
A small business owner who doesn't have a commercial space who's using residence, is that one of the things that they have available to them as a home office deduction?
Yeah,
absolutely.
Definitely.
The IRS actually is making that easier now to take the home office deduction, so they realized it was taking people a lot of time to calculate things. They actually let people take a simplified method now, just a flat, $5 a square foot up to a maximum of $1,500 deduction. So so they realize that more people out there are working from home. Last article I read a couple years ago said that actually about 50% of the people in America had a home-based business of some kind. So definitely something that people should be taking advantage of and shouldn't be afraid to take it. It's not really an audit red flag like some people think it is, in our experience at least.
Well, I just want to add what's interesting is, you know, when they first came out with this new standard deduction version of the home office, you know, because before we have to keep our receipts and we calculate, you know, how much of our home is business use. And so people didn't really like doing that, of course. No one likes receipts and record keeping, although it's required. No one likes to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So we were all really excited about this thing that came about with the standard deduction. But I have to say that, you know, this has been around for about a year now, and of all the tax returns that we've done, we have yet to see one where the standard deduction was produced a better answer than the actual, you know, using the actual expense calculation. Now, it could be, you know, because a lot of our clients are in California, and obviously the cost of living here, the mortgage interest and property taxes are just so high that it far outweighs the standard number that the IRS gives us.
Well, that's the thing. I was thinking that would be very true. I mean, if you had a home that was 20%, you could say would be necessary for your business, that would be way beyond $1,500 a
right,
year.
Right, right.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Now, how does that get recaptured? Now, you sell your residence. If you're in California or if you lived in it for two of the last 5 years, it's not taxable except for the portion that you deducted. Is that correct?
Partially. It's the only part you have to recapture in that scenario would be any depreciation you would have claimed as part of your home office. So any of the other expenses don't have to be recaptured, you know, your portion of insurance, property taxes, utilities, whatever.
Okay.
So it's just a depreciation. So, yeah, we do see that sometimes where a client will sell their house. They've got, you know, less than $500,000 of gain, so theoretically it's tax-free to a married couple, but maybe they depreciated their, you know, home office for a couple of years, so they got some depreciation income to pick up. But yeah, it's not the whole thing, so it's kind of nice.
Well, and I also want to kind of talk about a myth, because I do hear this quite a bit, Bruce, in terms of people telling me, you know, I don't want to take a home office because I'm so afraid of this depreciation recapture.
Right.
I think it's important for people to understand that you only have depreciation recapture because you've benefited from it via a home office write-off. So, like, if we're talking about someone who, you know, let's say pays 25% for federal and, you know, 10% for California plus self-employment tax, then what's happening is they're getting that write-off, saving 50% in taxes. And then later on when they recapture, it's going to be at a lower rate. So generally it's still going to make sense. You know, it's one, it's just deferring the tax.
Right, it's also later.
Exactly, we're paying later and we're paying less than what we took a deduction for. So it's not all that bad that I think a lot of people think it's this most terrible thing.
Do you see any changes coming about in the tax rate structure for next year, either for, you know, state, federal, or capital gains?
No, there hasn't been talks of any rate changes so far. Now there's, you know, potentially what you'll see going on next year might be maybe removals of certain credits, you know, or more credits that are expiring that doesn't get renewed. But no, with respect to tax rates for income taxes, capital gains, we've not seen anything being discussed.
Do you have an audit flag that you would say, well, this is going to raise the hair on the back of the IRS's neck? Don't do that. Are there, what are the best, what are the audit flags that you know of?
Well, one that that we've been told from that's coming down from the IRS is with respect to self-directed retirement accounts.
Okay.
And specifically, and that's very important for us, and we're keeping our eyes out for that because we have a lot of clients that use self-directed accounts for real estate or note investments. But specifically, what they've indicated is that they're doing more audits on the checkbook control retirement accounts, where you have an LLC, you know, your real estate, I mean, your IRA investment LLC, and you basically, as the account holder, have access to, you know, cut checks or receive money in that particular LLC account. And the reason that's going to be more of an audit flag is just, as you can imagine, the likelihood of a taxpayer making a mistake inadvertently, or someone intentionally commingling, you know, or using retirement money for personal uses. And because there's not as much oversight and a lot of flexibility on the taxpayer's end, that's one focus area that the IRS had indicated they will potentially spend more of their resources on.
Because they think they can get rewarded the highest for.
Yeah, well, because there's a lot of money in retirement, and we're seeing a lot of that being moved into the self-directed arena. And the rules are complex in that, you know, what they feel is that the average taxpayer would not necessarily know what they can or cannot do. And so what, you know, for Matt and I, what we always talk to clients about, you know, I know there are a lot of people using checkbook control with self-directed retirement accounts, but, you know, for us, we always look at it client by client. If it's someone who's very sophisticated, they understand the rules, that might be okay. If it's someone who's brand new to real estate, you know, took a 30-minute class, that's definitely someone we highly advise against something like that, just because there's so many things that could go wrong.
We're already in August, but do people start planning taxes, you know, tax moves now before the end of the year? And if they are, what would be some of the things that you could do to make a difference in what you ended up paying?
That's a great question. I mean, in fact, in our office right now, we're touching base with all of our planning clients just to do a check-in. And what I'm talking to people now is I'm trying to get an idea of what has been their activities to date so far. You know, whether it's if you're, you know, people doing fix and flip, what's the profit we're looking at, how many more we're looking at selling before the end of the year, or if it's someone doing rentals, you know, we want to know if they sold anything, is there any 1031 exchanges, or if they purchased anything. The key between, you know, typically when we look at year-end planning, is doing it towards the middle or end of October, because by then most people have a really good idea what net profit is going to look like for 2014. But what I encourage people to start doing today in August is to make sure you take some time to get all of your financial stuff up to date. So whether you're using QuickBooks or Quicken, you know, just making sure that all of our income and expenses are caught up through today, and whatever, you know, adjustments or questions that you have, be working with your tax advisor on getting all those resolved now, so that by the time October rolls around, you have pretty good numbers to work with in terms of projecting, you know, what's the income, what's the expenses. Because, you know, at year-end planning, what you want to do is be able to say, okay, this is what I think is going to happen for the year, for the rest of the year. This is what I know already happened this year. And based on these numbers, what should we do? You know, should we set up retirement accounts? If so, how much should we put in from each company? Should we maybe shift money from one to the next?
We have run out of time. How do people get a hold of you guys?
They can call our office. Our phone number is 877-975-0975, or they can send an email to info@keystonecpa.com. That's KEYSTONECPA.com.
Matt and Amanda, thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you, Bruce. Really appreciate it.
All right. Pleasure talking with you guys.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.